Hey fam, thanks for listening to the Better Man podcast. This season, the podcast is brought to you by Aroga Drive, one of my favorite energy supplements. If you're looking for all-day clean energy that won't let you crash and burn, Drive is the one. Stop pounding the coffee, stop crushing the Red Bulls. Instead, take Aroga Drive one time in the morning and you're good for the rest of the day. Check it out in the show notes or visit arogadrive.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Better Man Podcast. My name is Adam Tarno. Listen, we have got a doozy today on the Better Man Podcast, so buckle up and get ready. Darren Whitehead joins us. Darren, some of you guys may know Darren. He is a pastor of a church out in Nashville, Tennessee. He's from Australia, so if nothing else, you're just going to love to hear that great Aussie accent as he goes through his content today. So he's pastor of Church of the City there in Nashville. Early part of this year, he released a great book called The Digital Fast, 40 Days to Detox Your Mind and Reclaim What Matters Most. And listen, this is a conversation about our relationship with our phones. And Darren is just a normal guy, just like all of us. He's a dad, he's a pastor, he's got daughters, teenage daughters, and he just decided to dive headfirst into this huge felt need that so many of us are thinking through, battling right now, not just with our teenagers, but more specifically with ourselves, right? Our relationship with our phone. If you guys may be longtime listeners of the podcast, you remember Joey Odom with the Aro, that box that you can put in your home to put your phones into. I'll put a link in the show notes to that episode. He was on Joey's podcast and Joey introduced him here to us on the Better Man podcast. And I'm so grateful that he did. So Darren's going to tell his story of where this came from. It is a conversation filled with hope. It is a conversation filled with some very practical ideas. And it is not a conversation of a guy who's got it all figured out telling us what to do. It's a guy who's in the middle of the struggle with all of us. And so I think you're going to find it immensely helpful and probably want to share this with a lot of people in your circle of friends. So sit back, relax. If you're driving in, turn it up a little bit and enjoy my conversation with Darren Whitehead. Well, Darren, welcome to the Better Man Podcast. So excited to have you here today with us. You're coming to us from sunny Nashville, Tennessee, right?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, Adam. Yes, it is a beautiful day outside. And I mean, the spring is magnificent in Tennessee. It's yes. There's enough rain and enough sunshine, and it's still pretty mild. And it's just like you wake up in the morning and it's a clear blue sky, and you're like, it is good to be alive.
That's right. And then the cicadas show up, right? Because that's what you're dealing with up there right now. Cicadas show up.
Yeah, yeah. So we're in this interesting time right now, and it happens like every couple of hundred years where the 13-year cicadas and the 17-year cicadas have come at the same time.
Yes.
And it's astounding to me that these bugs literally go into the ground and they wait for 13 years.
That is nuts.
And I'm also astounded, like, who's the guy that worked that out? Like, who's the guy that, like, you know, kind of measured that and said, and, you know, it's 13, you know?
It's 13. Let's do that.
Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah.
And then a group come along and said, well, we're going to go 17. We see you're 13.
We're going to go 17. We see you 13 and we raise you. Yeah, that's
four.
Right.
Yeah, that yes. four. Yes. Well, anyway, there's a bunch of people listening all around the country right now that are dealing with that. It really is two types of people in the world right now, those dealing with the cicadas and those not. But anyway, so listen, I want to talk about your book today, the Digital Fast. And real specifically, I'd love to hear just a little bit of the genesis of where this came from. Can you tell us a story about you taking your daughters out and, you know, just what those conversations were like? Cause I think there's going to be some dads that'll learn from that. So just talk about those dates, what questions you were asking and what you learned during those.
So I have three teenage daughters and I was one of three boys growing up. I was the eldest of three boys. I had no sisters. And in the sense of humor of heaven, I live with a house full of ladies. I describe it a little bit like there's always someone crying. It's usually me, but there's always someone crying, right?
Always, always.
So, you know, they told me that the teenage years with ladies was going to be easy, and they lied. Mm-hmm. But I am very close to my girls. By the grace of God, I'm very close. They're all very different. It surprises me how different they are.
Yeah.
And yet each of them I have a real connection. They're 17, 15, and 13. And like a lot of dads who are really trying to be intentional about, you know, nurturing relationships with their kids, I take my daughters some level of regularity out on one-on-one dates, and they get to choose a restaurant. And it's just a chance where we're staring at one another and I can kind of, I don't know, get into their heart a little bit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And this particular time, a couple of years ago, I decided I was going to ask all three of them the same two questions. And I felt like my dad game was reasonably strong, so I felt quietly confident going into this. Yeah. But the two questions are, what's dad doing right that he needs to do more of, and what's dad doing wrong that he needs to do less of?
Okay.
And I asked each of them the same two questions. For the first question, they had all different answers. One said, we like it when you take us to school. Another one said, we like it when you make us laugh. Another one said, we like it when you injure yourself because it's really funny to us. So, yeah, so like do more of that, you know?
Yeah, just fall more. That'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the second question, without colluding with one another, they all said the same thing. We wish you didn't spend so much time on your phone.
Okay.
And, you know, if one of them had said that to me, I think I probably would have tried to dismiss it as though she doesn't know anything, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But all three of them said the same thing.
Wow.
And it was embarrassing. I felt ashamed. And I felt like every great parent says to me, cherish these days because they're fleeting, right?
Yep, yep.
And my oldest is 17. She's going to be about to be a senior in high school. And we're at the point now with her where we're kind of counting backwards rather than forwards in terms of how much longer we have with her. And to think that I had exchanged the infinitely valuable time with my daughters for doom scrolling cat videos on Instagram.
Which is the second confession in this story.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I mean, which, you know, I just looking at dumb stuff. I mean, just looking at mindless clutter.
Yeah.
That for whatever reason distracted me and sucked me into some wormhole of just like staring at little videos on a glowing rectangle. And I am missing that which is fleeting and that which I will treasure for the rest of my life.
That's right.
And I thought, I've got to think better about this.
Yeah.
And I've got to do something about this.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's a part of me like the, if this was a Hollywood movie, you would have gone home right after that and you would have had your Jerry Maguire moment where you stayed up all night and you typed out your manifesto and lo and behold, it's this book and this idea of a 40-day digital fast and all that kind of stuff. But we live in the real world where there's 13 and 17 year cicadas. So what did like you take that, do you go home and immediately talk to your wife about this? Do you start talking to your friends? Like what were some of the next steps after that?
Adam, it was actually a convergence of things, sort of like most things in life, you know, like a vision comes in seed form and then there is a convergence of multiple things. You know, shortly after that moment, I'm having lunch with a friend who has young kids and they decided they wanted to do therapy as a family. Mm. And there's a great therapist and they all loaded up and went to see a therapist and the therapist said, okay, your first assignment is before we even meet is you need to do 30 days off of screens as a family. And they're like, wait, what?
What? I think we got the wrong therapist.
Exactly. And so they said, all right. So he was like, I'm day 14 into this, you know, like month off of screens. I said, well, how's it going? He said, dude, amazing.
Wow.
You know, he said, my kids are so much more attentive and obedient. They fight less. They're compliant. They are cleaning up without being asked. You know, like, I mean, it was honestly like a miracle drug or something.
Wow. Wow.
And it was just really intriguing to me. And it was coming up towards the end of the year. And in our church, we begin the first 21 days of each year, like January 1 through 21, in a season of just prayer and fasting and seeking God, you know, mm-hmm. scripture and prayer. And we do as a whole church, right? It's a real emphasis mm-hmm. that we do. And over the course of time, sometimes people would say, you know, I want to do a digital detox instead of prayer, or I want to get off social media instead of fasting, you know? And I'm thinking to myself, that's actually a really good thing to do, but it is a different thing to do. Hmm. That biblical fasting is probably the most neglected spiritual practice in the modern world.
That's fair.
Because it's uncomfortable and we don't like it. You know, no one likes being hungry, you know?
Yeah.
But it may be more potent and more powerful than any other time in history because we live in a time where we appease our comforts at any turn, you know, at any moment.
Yep.
So we're encouraging people like if you can, try to not eat. Like try to not eat solid food. And we did it sort of in a tapered way where you do like no solid food for 7 days and then you introduce one meal and then you introduce two meals. So it's like 3-7-7-7, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we're giving people tools and things to help them with spiritual practices and to really engage God as you're starting a brand new year. So this is where I had the thought. I was like, what if, and I ended up saying this to the church, and I didn't even know how we were going to do it, but I said, we're going to do a fast. We're going to do the 21 days of prayer and fasting. And some of you are talking about doing a digital thing. I want you to hold off on that idea because later in the year, we're actually going to do that specifically together.
Okay.
And I had no idea tactically what that would look like. I just really had a 30,000 foot idea. And so after that, I started just reading everything I could find about best practices and how you would do that. And I'd never heard of a church doing that as a church before. And, I was a little insecure about the whole idea, like that people were going to be like, listen, bro, just teach the Bible, like stay in your lane, you know, like. Yeah. Like, don't tell me what to do with my smartphone, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it turns out, Adam, and our church has done it twice now. It turns out it's been one of the most powerful and life-transforming things that we've ever done.
That's amazing. That's so, I mean, there's certain areas of my life where I see this play out. It's almost it, like when you say that, it's almost like conversations I have with somebody who gives up sugar for 30 days, or they completely change their relationship with alcohol, or they just start getting sleep, you know, like I'm going to really take sleep serious. After 30 days, they're raving like that. So there's a part of me that like I've got a category for that type of a review or that, you know, those glowing reviews with all of that. But then, you know, then it gets into, okay, well, how? And we're going to get to that here in a second. But I think one of your observations about this being a collective action problem, because it reminds me of some conversations I've had with my friends that maybe are struggling with some form of a poor relationship with food. It's something they need. Like food provides a utility to them. They're surrounded by food, as you alluded to, like our culture is just loves food, right? It's everywhere we go. Yeah. And so you can feel so lonely sometimes with all of it. And I love that observation you had about with our phones, that's being a collective action problem. So describe that, because I think that's an important observation.
Yeah. So a collective action problem is also known as a social dilemma, is the idea that a community of people, a society of people are doing something that is destructive to them and they know it is.
Yep.
And yet they all keep doing it, right? And so The idea is we all know that social media and smartphones are having a detrimental impact on our mental health.
Yeah.
But if you ask a teenager, so why don't you just get off social media? They'll say, I can't because everyone else is on it.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's FOMO, right? It's the fear of missing out. And so we keep doing something that is destructive to ourselves because we don't want to be the only one.
Yeah.
So the really powerful thing about collective action problems is that they can be addressed with collective action. So a coordinated collective action. So what that means is that if a church, which is the ideal community to do this, if a church says we're all going to do this together, you completely remove this sense of I'm all on my own. If you ask, I've asked so many people over the years, have you ever done a digital detox? They say, no, but I need to.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's the thing you never get around to, right?
Yeah.
Until your church says, hey, folks, we're all going to do this. And there's this sense of like, if not now, then when, right? Like,
now's
the time. We're going to do this. And so for teenagers, it's like their friend group, their small group in their student ministry, their parents and their grandparents, like all of their sort of social world, or at least a significant part of their social world, all goes on this journey together.
Yeah.
And there's been some research that's been done recently where they ask teenagers the question, would you prefer to live in a world where smartphones and social media was never invented?
Hmm.
And the overwhelming majority of them say yes.
Yeah.
I remember asking my daughter, and my daughter has a smartphone. I remember asking my daughter, you know, do you just wish you didn't have a phone? She said to me, yes, but I also wish none of my friends did.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Which is the idea, isn't it? It's a collective action problem. We're like stuck in this together.
Yeah.
So the way to get out of it is coordinated collective action. And it turns out that a church is just poised and perfect for something like this.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, because it's as you before we hit record, you and I were talking about again some things I see like in the marketplace world that I'm hanging out at times, or things I'll see on LinkedIn are talking about this. I'm sober curious, right? So it's people who are kind of saying, "Hey, my relationship with alcohol, it feels a little off. Like I don't think I'm an alcoholic, but yet it's just messing with me." And so I'm sober curious. I'd like to hear more stories of people who just gave it up. And what I'm hearing you say there is almost there's some people like that with their phone. They're almost detox curious. Is that a fair correlation?
That is absolutely true. And what's interesting is like, so the iPhone came out in 2007, right?
Right.
I bought an iPhone on the day it came out.
I
didn't sleep out there. I'm not that guy, but I, but I went there just to hold one. And it turns out that there was one, you know, available. And I looked at my wife and I said, please. And she rolled her eyes and just sort of nodded, you know. And you know,
do you remember what the first ones, like how much they were?
I was trying to think about that. I know that mine was a 4 gig. So it was, you know, only 4 gigs.
Yeah.
I bet it was like $399 or $400 bucks or something.
Which
like
was
that.
Mind blowing because all the cell phone companies back then were just giving them away, right?
You
pay for it over time and
No, they came in hot. But you know, the 2007 iPhone didn't have an app store. It didn't have push notifications. It didn't have a front-facing camera. It didn't have social media. I mean, what happened is from 2007 to 2009, it was almost a universally positive experience with this device.
That's right.
You know, and it was bringing about breakthrough, you know? But then around about 2012, there was like this real shift. Jonathan Haidt even calls, he talks about in his book, The Anxious Generation, he talks about the fact that with kids, they went from a play-based childhood to a phone-based childhood.
Yeah.
And you know, the impact of that has been actually diabolical on mental health on kids. But what has happened is these devices have seeped their way into our lives, and with as simple as an OS update while we sleep in the middle of the night, they've reinvented as these completely different devices that are more addictive and distracting, and the algorithms are completely designed to exploit our personal weaknesses and proclivities towards addiction.
Yep.
And we mindlessly consume this media, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what has happened now is, and this has only happened probably in the last 3 years, there is a universal awareness of the negative impact of these devices.
That's right.
And we didn't used to have that conversation. I think 5 years ago, even, no one would say, oh, you know, I need to rethink the relationship with my phone, you know, or, you know, like people just didn't really talk like that.
And now
almost everyone, the exception is sort of like your great grandfather who doesn't know how to use it very well and he's hardly on it.
But he needs
almost
a better relationship.
Everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost everyone else is kind of going, I'm on it way too much.
Yeah. Maybe it's taking more than it's giving. With the collective action problem, I mean, we can think back to some examples in our culture, which give me some hope that maybe as conversations and books like yours continue to come into the culture? Because we've got, I mean, just things that I've seen in my own, my 49 years, just relationships with smoking, seatbelts, drunk driving, you know, things like that, where like just how natural it is for us to get into a car and buckle a seatbelt, or how natural it is for us to look at somebody smoking and we're like, what? You know, like that was so different when we were growing up. So as books like this and as more and more research comes out, there is some hope that maybe we can have some more of that collective action towards health.
I have no doubt that parents of preteens are going to do so much better than I did. They will benefit from me. You see, what I did is when my eldest daughter was old enough to do sleepovers at friends' houses or play school sports, I wanted them to have a phone. I went to the junk drawer in my kitchen. I found an old iPhone and I fired it up and I gave it to her.
Yeah.
And I didn't know any better. And there was no research that was bringing about correlation between smartphones and mental health.
Right.
Now, so eventually there was a correlation, and then now there is a causation, which means that they have definitively found that social media and smartphone addiction or habits are having a drastic detrimental impact on mental health of certainly of teenagers, but of everyone.
Yep. Yeah. Which I, you know, let's talk real quickly to those parents that are maybe more like you. It's like, man, I had no clue. I did the same thing. I have the same junk drawer. And, or maybe I'm probably more of what the preteens, I've got the 15-year-old, 13-year-old, our 13-year-old, well, our 15-year-old now, when he was in seventh grade, got the Gab phone type thing, you know, or pinwheel, I think is what it was called.
Yeah,
and some of those starter phones. So maybe I think we've learned some things from having some people down the road a little bit farther. But you talked about the, you know, the correlation and the causation. And the thing that I would say to parents that have these teenagers at home with all of this is like, now it just requires a lot of conversation.
That's right.
Like, we've got to help them interpret. We got to help them connect the dots. We've got to help them just think about this, as John Acuff calls it, this casino that's in their pocket all the time. And just help them with this, and just know it's going to be a battle, and there's going to be a couple steps ahead and maybe some steps back, but we got to just stay engaged. It's not just, hey, good luck and figure it out, right?
Yeah. You know, the first thing I would say to parents, if you've given your kids smartphones and they're on social media, is no judgment, no shame.
For sure.
This is relatively new information.
Right.
And none of us are knowingly giving something that's destructive to our kids. Parents don't do that.
Right. Yeah.
We want our kids to thrive. We want our kids to develop into high-functioning, socially intelligent adults. You know, none of us are trying to harm our kids. So there's no judgment and no shame. But what I would say is, and the research was very inconclusive for a while, and now it's very conclusive. And the research has found, as specifically as this, when a girl is going through puberty, if she also has social media, that is very destructive.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
I was on a podcast with Dr. Ben Carson. A few weeks ago, he had me on to talk about this, and you know, he's a brain surgeon.
Yep.
And I learned about the fact that there are two types. There are two moments in the development of a human being where their brains are going into overdrive in terms of development. The first is in utero. No surprise there, when a baby is, you know, developing and growing in the womb. The second is puberty. So at puberty, a child's brain is reinventing itself.
Okay.
It is firing. There are synapses. Like it is just, it is like a storm that is going on inside their skull.
Yeah.
And if you are plaguing your mind, consuming content that provokes comparison, you know, the new OCD is obsessive comparison disorder, you know.
Ah, that's good.
And and just like this life of superficiality, where their bodies are changing, and you know, and they're desperately insecure, and they're filling their minds with that. I mean, this is why you're seeing depression, cutting, and suicide just skyrocketing.
Yep.
Now, it's also destructive for boys as well.
Yeah,
but disproportionately for girls in puberty. So I would say to a parent that's listening to this, if you have a teenage son or daughter, and they are currently in the throngs of puberty and they have social media, I would do everything I possibly could to get that out of their hands. I know that that sounds extreme, and a right. lot of parents say to me at times, you know, well, it kind of feels like the ship has sailed, is the phrase they use. Yeah. So to use that metaphor, if the ship was sailing and you knew this ship was going to sink, what would you do? Would you turn it back around and maybe get it back in the dock? You know, like, I mean, you would do something about it if it was going to be harmful. The advice that I give to parents is no shame, no judgment. But if you do a digital fast where you as parents and your kids, you step off of these platforms for 40 days and then have a conversation about what would it look like going forward. Hmm. So you're not making a decision forever. You're making a temporary decision that you're all going to do together and then have a conversation.
I love it. That's great. Now, one of the more insightful things that I've heard you bring up is kind of getting into the why we pick up our phone. I mean, so I got my first iPhone in 2010. I joke around sometimes that I'll say, I remember very specifically the last day I was bored. And that was the day before I got my iPhone. And so
right. you know,
I jokingly call my iPhone my BPD, my boredom prevention device.
Right.
So all the stoplights, the lines, the
That's
elevators,
right.
the walks in. What I've never thought about is really like, why am I doing that? I just kind of always chalked it up as, it sucks to be bored, you know? But I think there may be some more going on there. Talk about this, you know, what may be happening as to why we're picking this up so much and how we might be ignoring some really important warning signs
yeah.
that the Lord has given us with our emotions.
Yeah, we have really developed as a society a boredom intolerance
yep.
and a distress intolerance. Hmm. And so what that means is if you are, and this is so in the subconscious world, right? And
right.
yet when I say this, you'll go, oh, that's true. When you're anxious, when you are afraid, when you are sad, or when you feel shame, they are very uncomfortable feelings, right?
Yeah.
And so what we generally do is we immediately distract ourselves to soothe us away from those uncomfortable feelings.
That's
no
right.
one likes to feel ashamed, and you don't want to feel anxious. You don't feel a surge of fear. So you numb yourself with the news, or you numb yourself with a game, or you numb yourself with social media. What's everyone else doing?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you are able to cover up that uncomfortable feeling that you have. What's interesting is that so many of us now are walking around with all of this unprocessed feelings that are beneath the surface. Hmm. And ordinarily, or in past eras, we used to have those unpleasant feelings, but we would process those feelings, right? You're kind of like living in it. And it's terrible. Maybe you write something out, or you have a conversation with your spouse, or you kind of get somewhere with getting those feelings processed through you. So they move through you so that they don't keep bubbling up. But kind of like a beach ball that you are holding under the surface of the water.
Such a great visual. Yeah, I got you.
If you just keep covering it over all the time, I think, and I've talked to some psychologists about this, it's like a working theory. Is this why there are so many more panic attacks these days?
Huh.
Because a panic attack is just sort of like this combustion. It's like this beach ball's coming up, bro, and you now have no agency to
stop it
anymore.
That's right, yeah.
And so it's an unraveling.
Mm.
But it doesn't come immediately. It comes out of pent-up suppression of these feelings. And generally, we don't do it knowingly. Just like if we get a notification on our phone, it might be something important. But then we look at something unimportant, right? Then we look at, you know, or maybe you want to check the weather outside. I encourage people to think about their phones when they're doing a digital fast through the lens of utility versus distraction.
That's good.
So the idea is there's got to be a third way. There's got to be a way in between addiction or Amish, right? Mm. We've got to, like, we're not telling people to take a hammer and smash up their iPhone.
Right.
I want people to think not all apps are created equal.
Mm.
So think about the apps that are distractions for you. These are apps like social media, games, news, video apps, even email.
Shopping apps. Yeah.
So these are the things that you doom scroll on. These are the things that you are like staring at and 46 minutes goes by and you just don't even realize that you've done that, you know?
Yeah.
If you then reduce your phone down to a utility device, phone, text, GPS, calendar, when you board a Southwest airline flight, you don't then sit on the plane and play with the Southwest app for 45 minutes, you know? It's a utility. It's not a distraction.
No,
so utility devices are not destructive, right? They're actually helpful, and we live in the world of the smartphone. The smartphone's not going away.
Right.
But if you were able to remove distraction off of your phone for 40 days, that's what I'm talking about. That's what a digital fast looks like. And what you'll end up doing is you'll end up grabbing your phone, looking to numb yourself with some content, and all of a sudden realizing there's nothing shiny and cool to look at. Mm-hmm. And you'll put it down and you'll re-engage with the world again.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have a story about one of the first detoxes that you went through. Maybe it wasn't the first. I may have that part wrong. But your daughter inviting you out to go watch her play. Take us through that, because as I heard you tell that story, I was there with you. All the way down to you were barefoot, right?
Yeah.
Out in your backyard or something like that. So tell that story, because that's powerful.
To set that story up, the 40-day digital fast is four movements of 10 days.
Right.
The first 10 days is to detach. And like any addiction or like any bad habit we have, you will experience some sort of withdrawals, right?
Right.
The second movement is to discover. And you start to discover those feelings in yourself. You might discover the feelings in your spouse or your children or your friends. You might even discover the voice of God. Because you have more discretionary time, right? You're saying, Spirit of God, talk to me, you know, open my ears. The third movement is called delight, and that is days 20 through 30. And what happens is the senses in your body reset.
Wow.
It's like you see things differently. You feel, your skin feels different. You taste differently. I was talking with Jonathan Haidt recently about this, and he said, as a psychologist, he said, let me tell you what's happening. He said, after about 3 weeks, your dopamine levels reset to normal. What happens is that social media causes us to have an overdose of dopamine, and dopamine stops doing what it's supposed to do. It stops making us feel really joyful. It stops making us feel this surge of happiness. Because we're getting flooded. Our dopamine receptors are getting flooded. When you do about 3 weeks where you're not doing that anymore, they come back to normal. And so the story that you're referring to, I was doing a digital fast. I was about 20 days in. I wasn't even carrying my phone around the house anymore. It was just in a drawer somewhere. I just didn't care. I was disconnected from it. And my daughter said, Dad, come watch me on the trampoline. And I was barefoot and I walked outside. And it's so funny, right? I had the conscious thought of like, man, the grass feels amazing under my feet. And then I walked out and I looked up at the sky and it was like the sun was about to set and it was about 72 degrees and there was a light breeze. And I looked at my daughter and she was squealing and giggling and saying, watch me, Daddy, watch me, Daddy. And I just had this conscious thought, this is a better life.
Yeah.
This is a better life. It was delightful. Like I was just watching my daughter and going, she is a thing of beauty for me.
Yep.
She fills my heart with joy. Does life get better than this? And I'm telling you, it's so much better. than sitting in the corner staring at a glowing rectangle, wondering what your friends are doing. You know?
That's right. Yes. Or watching, I think it was Louis Giglio years ago, at some message of his that I was listening to, it was like he talked about how he spent a couple hours on a Saturday flipping through channels watching a man stain a deck. And it's just the way, just how ludicrous that is, and how he was saying, I was watching another person live while I wasn't living, and just that connection. Right. I remember this was long before smartphones, but I just, that story reminds me of that. Just how much we're watching other people's lives. I think about it, my son's 13 year old birthday party that he had a bunch of kids over. We had the blow up movie theater thing for the backyard, you know, the screen, and they were going to watch a Spider-Man movie. And there's like one kid, and I won't say his name because his parents may be listening, but I couldn't find him for a moment. I'm like, where is he? And he's up in our treehouse by himself on his phone.
Yeah.
And I just remember going up there just going, hey, bud, there's a party right over here. Why don't we put that away and come out? And listen, we've all done that, right? That's not a 13-year-old thing. Yeah.
It's a lot easier to see in your kids, quite frankly, but,
for sure.
But we are guilty of it. So the last movement in the 40 days is determine. And at that point, we're inviting people to think about, all right, now that I've had an extended time where I've removed the distractions off my phone, what do I want to bring back? What do I want my long-term digital habits, my consumption of these devices, what do I want that to look like? And we encourage people to think about Marie Kondo, your digital world, right?
Yeah.
Marie Kondo is the one that helps people clean out their closets, and you hold up an item of clothing and you ask the question,
great.
Does this spark joy or not? And if it doesn't, you throw it out. If it does, you keep it. So on the other side of a digital fast, ask yourself the question, does Instagram on my phone spark joy?
Hmm.
Does TikTok spark joy? Does Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat, like the... do these apps make me a better person, make me joyful, or would I prefer to not even have them on? And so many people who do this, they never put social media back on their phone.
That's great.
And and it's not that they never go onto social media. It's not that they never go onto Instagram, but they just don't have the apps on their phone. So when they pull up at the lights, they don't open Instagram and just start scrolling and looking at what everyone else is doing. You know, we encourage people that instead of FOMO, we need to flip this and say, we want you to have JOMO, which is the joy of missing out.
Yes, that's good.
I am intentionally missing out, and I might miss my friend's wedding anniversary, and I might not know what my neighbor had for dinner last night, and I might not see the family on the beach wearing matching khakis and white shirts. I might not see that picture, right? But it's a choice, and it's better, and it's JOMO.
I love it. What a great way to end. So here's, well, let me ask one more question, because the thing that goes through my mind, I know you're a pastor, and so you talk about this in your church. Are people just awkward about bringing their phones out around you? Like, do they feel judged every time they're around you now that you're such a voice of this?
So
what is it like socially?
No one's asked me that question before, but yeah, I mean, I am a little bit of the smartphone police. I think, you know, or people feel like they need to justify what they're doing. They're like, hey, I'm just checking where my daughter is. You know, I'm not on social media. But what's funny is I'm also conscious of this as well. Like, I was at a restaurant the other day. I was all by myself because I was waiting on my daughter to arrive. And I have my phone, and I'm kind of like, I don't know, man, a bunch of people from church is going to see me numbing out on
That's
my
right.
phone. So I feel that too.
Yes, there is something about going public with it, because there was a line in my book that I released back in September of 22 where I talked about like being on an airplane. It's a little bit connected to what we're talking about here. I was just like, you know, next time you're on an airplane, just take notice of how many adults are playing video games versus reading, right?
Right.
And so it was kind of like a total self-righteous make fun of other people. And now every time I get on an airplane, which is relatively often, and I'm like, I'm just tired. I just want to look at my phone. I'm always like, but somebody may have read the book, and they may be seeing me. And so you gotta hold yourself accountable to your own words. But
that's right.
Anyway, Darren, this is awesome. I mean, you've given us so much to think about. And listen, I know there's so much more that we didn't even have time to get to that's included in the book. So go pick up a copy of The Digital Fast. You can find it at Amazon, all kinds of different places, wherever books are, you can go find it. And think about how to do this. I also want to reference back to the guy that introduced us, Joey Odom. and his buddy Heath with the Aero Box, and we've had him on the podcast just talking about how some of these devices, not bad, but sometimes we just got to change our relationship with them. We want to make sure that these things are in. I love your, they're a utility, not a distraction. They're giving, they're not taking from us. And so these are all wonderful conversations. So
yeah. And if you're a church, if you're a church leader, it's so, and I didn't know it would be this powerful as a church when we did this. It wasn't like that was my plan. That was my discovery. It is so powerful doing it as a community.
Yeah.
And so like do it together.
For sure.
Digitalfast.com is where you can get a bunch of information about this. You can buy books at bulk if you want, and you want to do it as a whole community. Would love to help in any way I can.
Love it. Well, Darren, you're a joy, and keep it up, man. Keep it up. And thanks for jumping on the Better Man podcast with us.
Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate it.
Hey, brothers, if we want to finish strong, we need to start strong. And I can't think of a better way to start your day than with some encouragement from God's word. That's what Better Mornings, the Better Man Daily Devotional, is all about. Start your morning with Better Mornings and be the man God has called you to be. Check out the link in the show notes or visit betterman.com/resources and sign up for Better Mornings, the Better Man Daily Devotional.